Good morning, friends. Great seeing all of you. As always, our ushers are going to come forward, give us an opportunity to partner together financially. So if you came prepared to give, this would be the time to do that, to participate in the life change that God is up to in and through our community, both here in the Triangle and around the world. It's just cool. While I was walking back through the lobby here, getting ready to come out just a few minutes ago, and there was a mom and her two kids and my grandmother and who walked in, and she was in the back doors, couldn't find a place to sit, and so she just said, "You know, I want to let you know, that is an awesome problem that we have as a church right now." She's like, "Look in there, isn't that great?" And she's like, "So we're going to leave right now, we're going to go get some breakfast, and we're going to come back to the noon service," but she's like, "I just want to let you know, I'm so excited." And I was like, "Could I just duplicate that attitude, you know, like, that is awesome, you know?" But man, just thank you guys, too, for being a part of a community that's always trying to be flexible, always trying to figure out a way, how do we help more and more people participate on the journey? And so thanks for making room in here and always trying to figure out to do whatever you take, because I know what it's like to try to crowd in. And I remember part of me, when I was growing up in church and we were part of a growing church as well, and I remember sitting on steps and for months and months and months, and but still wanted to just be a part of it. So thank you guys for wanting to be a part of our community. And but there is a little more, you know, elbow room in first and third service, just to let you know. So if you have some flexibility and want a little more space, those are great opportunities as well. Well, I'm really excited that you're here today, and you're going to get to hear about some exciting stuff. And we've been in this series on humility, and really excited what we've been walking through. But also, we recognize that for many of us that are starting to come and that you're maybe new to our community or new recently here in the last couple months, and wanted to kind of get you a further glimpse into who we are as a community and what we do and kind of what we're about. And one of those things is what we do outside of our community here in this building. Several years ago, we hung a lot on a phrase written by an author named Shane Claiborne, and he said, "It's not that the rich don't care about the poor." And when he talked about rich, and we talked about in here, that if you're in America, you're rich, just kind of based on the global economy, that if we live in America, by virtue of just living here, we're considered in the rich part of the global economy. And said, "It's not the rich don't care about the poor, it's that the rich don't know the poor. But if the rich knew the poor, then poverty would come to an end." We were really captivated by that. And so we made the decision to say, outside of ourselves, what we're going to do is we're really going to try to invest in a few places around the world and try to make a radical difference there where we can really get to know people and build relationships with people, and they can know us and we can know them, and not try to do a little bit in a lot of different places. We're going to try to do a lot in a few. And so we have three partners. We have one locally. You've heard a lot about that here in recent months, the Durham Rescue Mission. We have people from this community every single week there, loving on those people there, hanging out with them, spending time with them, serving them. We bought thousands of backpacks full of school supplies for kids that are, you know, just in poverty there, and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of gifts just at Christmas time for all the residents there, and what they're, you know, just walking through lots of difficulty. So great, great things. So we do that here locally. Then globally, last several years, we've partnered in two countries in the world, in Kenya and in Haiti. And so we've had lots of exciting things that have happened. Several years ago, many of you weren't around here, we were captivated by this idea in Haiti, in the Jacmel and the Raymond area of Haiti. Said, what if we could buy these 17 acres of oceanfront property that came up? And what if we could try to create and develop this piece of land, not only to rescue orphans and to help have them homes there on that land, but then to give a gift to the community, where the community could have this community center and education and all these different kinds of things that could really be a blessing to the community in all these different ways, to train and equip people. And we just gave it to the community and found a way for them to develop it. So really captivated by that idea. In 1 week, this church raised over $400,000 in cash to purchase that land and to partner with Joy and Hope and to make that happen. And so it's been this great opportunity and this great dream that's been sitting out there for a long time. But we've had obviously different struggles in Haiti, and we've talked about that, been open and honest about that. But the earthquake really kind of put things back for a while, and so we've been doing different works, just trying to stabilize things as they are there now. But then we've been partnering in Kenya and trying to say, what can we do to really dive in deep in some communities there? And so several months ago, I stood up here and I talked about that we went and we traveled and looked at several different communities there to try to listen and try to pray and say, God, what community would you have us as a church kind of really dive in deep with? And so throughout this process over these years, we've come to the decision and realization that we need some other organizations to partner with. that we've partnered with Joy and Hope, and it's been great. But we also need some other people to help us, because what Joy and Hope is kind of really focused in on now is they're really good at trying to rescue kids in orphanages and try to bring them into a home environment. That's what's happening in Haiti with the Mangine family, and we talk about them, that they have rescued these kids, brought them into a family environment, and great life transformation is happening. But they've really narrowed their focus into that. But we've got these other dreams about development and education and community, holistic change. We want to see change happen in every way possible. That with water, because of, waterborne illnesses and diseases are killing people all over in the third world. And education is such a huge issue. And how do we improve that? And you can't just look at one slice. You got to look at all of this. And so we were praying, God, what are some other organizations we can partner with? And as I was praying, in that conversation of just listening, we talk about sacred echoes, things that God keeps bringing back to mind. I was listening to a podcast one day, and I heard this organization, 410 Bridge, and they were talking about it and what they were doing. I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. And then a couple days later, I was in a conversation with someone, and they mentioned this idea of this organization, 410 Bridge, that they were working with, and just really good things had happened. I was like, huh. A couple days later, heard it again, and I was like, wow, I need to at least get on their website and see what they're doing, because I know we're really called to these two places, to Haiti and to Kenya, and I don't know what it would look like, but another partner, but let's get on there. So I go on the website, 410bridge.org, type it in, front page splashes up. We do holistic development in two places in the world, Haiti and Kenya. And it's like, oh, okay, well, then maybe we should pay attention to that. And so that started a relationship of us spending time with the leadership of 410 Bridge. They're based out of Atlanta, and getting to know them and spend a lot of time with them. Then they came here, spent a lot more time, because we take this really seriously in terms of who we partner with, because we're serious about how we believe that God wants to use us around the world. And so through that, it's built a great relationship, gotten to know them, really excited to bring them on as a partner now, that Joy and Hope has partnered with them to give them part of that land that we've purchased to now do community development, and because that's what they do really, really well in terms of the holistic development with education and spiritual development, these kind of different things, and I'm really excited about our partner community. I mentioned a few months ago, Matura, that we've come alongside with, and so today, the president of 410 Bridge, Kurt Candler, has come to share with us, and I want you to get to know him a little bit as I've gotten to know him, and so would you give a nice cross-point welcome to Mr. Kurt Candler. Well, Kurt, again, I'm really, really thankful that you're here. Thanks. I know you are a busy guy. Kurt just got back from Haiti on Thursday. You travel a lot around the world, both back and forth to Africa and to Haiti. And so we're really honored that you would take some time to be with us here. And so I would love it if you would take a few moments and share with our church some of the vision and strategy behind 410 Bridge and what you guys are about.
Sure. Well, first, thank you as well. My first opportunity to come on Sunday morning to Cross Point, but I've been dying to do it, and so it's great to be here. Great church. The 410 Bridge, a lot of people ask us how we get our name. 410 Bridge, the 410 part of 410 Bridge comes from 1 Peter 4:10, and 1 Peter 4:10 says that everyone should use the gifts that they've received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. And what that really means is that God uses the gifts that we have to serve other people as a way to administer His grace to people, and that scripture just jumped off the page when we were looking really how to name our organization, what would really speak to the context of what we want to do, and so that's where we get our name. But we do, like you said, we do holistic community development, and a lot of people say, well, what does holistic mean? Is that like aromatherapy? Is that what is holistic? What holistic means is that we have to address every area of need. There are many, many organizations that do really great work all over the world, and they find a particular thing that they do really well, and they want to go do that one thing anywhere in the world they can, and that's great. We kind of turn that model on the side, and we say, look, we're going to go deep in a particular place so that we can see holistic change in that place. And so holistic means we have to address every area of need in that community. And really, we've learned that there are really five big rocks that need to be moved in every community that we've worked in. They all have really the top five priorities. And spiritual development is the first. Spiritual development means we're going to serve all the people in a particular community, but we're really looking to illustrate that this is God's grace being administered to them, not just a humanitarian effort. And we want to work with the local churches to pour into the people in a spiritual way. So we ask churches to come together in a non-denominational way and pour into them. And we really are all about developing them spiritually, just as any local church would want to do. And so the other four things that we do that kind of sit on top of that foundation of spiritual development, first and foremost is water. It's in just about every community that we've worked been the number one need. We take water for granted in our country. And people are walking 5 kilometers every day. In one community, they walk 10 kilometers a day overnight to dig a hole in a dried-up riverbed, and then they wait for a few hours for that hole to fill up with water where they dip their 5-gallon jerry can in there, and then they carry it 10 kilometers home so they can survive every day, something that we can't even comprehend. So water is usually the number one physical need, and then education is closely behind that. Education, microenterprise, creating an economy in these communities, and then healthcare is another. We have people that don't have access to just even rudimentary healthcare in any of our communities. They're walking 10 kilometers to have babies or to get a wound dressed or get pills or medications of some sort. So in a holistic way, those are really the 5 top things that we do. And then there's a lot of little things, you know, that fall in one of those categories as well.
Yeah. Well, I know one of the things that most excited us about your model was working with a group of local leaders mm-hmm. there that you guys call a leadership council mm-hmm. and that you work through them. And so talk a little bit about that council, how it works and how it affects the speed of what you guys are able to do and not do.
Right. Well, that's a great question. You know, we are firm believers in indigenous leadership. There are many organizations over the decades have been going in and doing what the West thinks is necessary in that place, in that solution. And we are, again, very much behind indigenous leaders. So our model of development rises and falls on strong leadership. And so we try to find that one leader in a community that has a vision beyond their own personal needs, which is tough because they have really significant personal needs. They're poor. They're struggling with a water situation, just like everyone else, food. But we try to find that one leader that has a vision beyond their own personal needs, beyond their own family's needs, beyond their own church's needs, and really have a vision for their community. And then once we find that person, and I assure you, we kiss a lot of frogs to find a few princes. It's tough, because when we go over there, they see us as the solution to their problem. And they don't ever want to be wrong. They don't want to tell us the wrong answer. And so we really have to vet them carefully and try to find strong leaders. But once we do that, we ask them to create a council of other leaders in the community. They could be, and they're usually pastors of the local churches. That's what we want. We want them all to come together in a non-denominational way, work together, leave their doctrinal issues at the door. But this could be head teachers of a school. It could be an opinion leader. And they create a council. That council is 7 to 13 people. And it's really the body that we communicate with on a regular basis. The leadership council is responsible for identifying the gifts that exist in the community, the assets that exist that we can come alongside and kind of help them see as an asset and help them kind of help use that to solve their problems. But then they also identify the needs, and then they're there to unify and mobilize their community to come out and do for themselves and participate in those solutions. So leadership councils are critically important, and we don't do anything unless it goes through the leadership council.
Yeah. So one of the things that you do well is in terms of illustrating kind of the pull and tug that happens because whenever you're working with another group of people, especially on the other side of the world, or you know whether that's in Haiti or in Kenya, and I know you guys have staff too from 410 Bridge staff that exist in both Haiti and in Kenya, but talk a little bit about how you guys manage that tension of, because we have a desire many times in the West of when we see a problem, we want to fix it, and we want to fix it now because we know that we can. And right. So talk a little bit about that tension.
Yeah, the example that I use with leadership councils that's worked over the years is, I'll be sitting in a room, and there'll be, again, however number of leaders in that room, and we'll be talking about the various things that are going on in their community, and they're eager, again, not to make a mistake. They're eager not to tell us the wrong answer. They're eager to get us started. And I give them the example of, you know, if you are in need, and I have a rope, and I throw you a rope, and you have one end of the rope, and I have the other end of the rope, and we pull that rope tight, but I try to push you, we're not going to go real far. And oftentimes, I'll actually have a rope, and I'll actually have a member of the leadership council hold the rope and try to push them. There's a lot of laughter going on in the room. They think it's kind of silly. I said, but if you pull the 410 bridge, and provided you know where you're going, and we want to follow you, we can go a long way together. And that analogy, or the metaphor, whatever it is something that's really resonated with them, and they recognize that we're never going to go before them. They have to pull us. And what that means is they have to really think through the dynamics of the solutions that they need to implement in their community to solve their problems. What we say is, you know, the problems that exist in Matura, for example, or in Ramon, they don't exist in the West. We don't have the problems that you have in your community. And the solution and the solutions to those problems, they don't exist in the West either. So don't look to the West for your solutions. Look to your community. And we want to come alongside you and help you do that. So there is invariably something that they can do that is on the way to getting to the solution. And then there's this gap between what they can do and the actual solution. And that's the gap we try to fill. But we never go in and go, here's the solution to your problem. Here's what should be done. Let us go do that for you. And then we feel really good about ourselves. We have to be pulled by the leadership council or the community to do it.
Well, you know, when you mentioned that everything rises and falls from a leadership council, especially in a community and doing holistic development, it rises and falls on the leader and finding the right kind of leader. And so we felt very similarly in looking at, you know, organizations. And so one of the reasons that you're here is because I have a lot of confidence in you and your humility and your ability to lead well and make really good decisions. So I'm just curious, in terms of us getting to know you a little bit more, how did you end up doing what you're doing now? How did you end up here in this spot?
Yeah, don't take this the wrong way. The reality is that we really have no idea what we're doing. We're really following God's lead in everything that we do. And the story behind that is just an interesting one. The more even I share it, I kind of step back from it and go, really, does that really happen? And it does. But I was in business, and my career has been filled with really starting businesses. I don't know why. I just love doing that. And in 2004, 2005, I was exposed to this ministry in Uganda, and I saw a bunch of photos from a friend of mine, and he was telling me about this school building where 90 orphans go to this school, and it was made out of mud and sticks, and every time it rained, the walls would fall down, and they'd have to get more dung and mud and sticks and repair the walls, and I thought, well, golly, how hard is it to build a brick building, really? I mean, come on, how hard can that be? Well, you know, I found out, and I decided that I felt like the guy was telling me, I really needed to go there and build them a school. So my family, long story short, is my family and I and a buddy of mine who introduced me to that ministry in Uganda went there. And Africa has a way of kind of capturing your heart. The people are so wonderful and joyful with nothing. And it captured my heart. But when I got there, I thought, you know, am I really making any difference? Before I went, I was telling people that I was going to go and build a school building and provide water in this well, and it was going to have a generational impact. And I wasn't there for but a day, and I realized, holy smokes, this is they got a lot of problems here. Am I really making a difference? And God brought along people, Africans, Ugandans, alongside me to illustrate that, Kurt, he's got you right where he wants you. And just do the next right thing. And so I did, and it was a remarkable experience. And when I came back to the States, I met our founder, Lanny Donahoe, and Lanny runs high school ministry and God's blessed him with a stage to influence a lot of people. And he said to me, he asked me, Kurt, what are you doing in Uganda? And he wanted to know, and I told him, and he says, that's awesome, continue to do that. He says, but this is what I'm thinking about. He said, I stand up in front of thousands, tens of thousands of people every year, hundreds and hundreds of churches. He said, what if we were able to take all those churches, all their time, talents, resources, and we focused on one country in East Africa? Do you think we could move the needle? Do you think we could move the needle to the extent that other organizations and other places around the world look at what's happening in that place that we're working and going, why is it different there? And they investigate why it's different and adopt the model of ministry and the model of development that we've got so that they can make an impact around the globe. And man, I was just captured by that. And I just knew that that's something that I thought I was really called to go do. So I told my wife, I said, honey, I said, I think this is, I'm supposed to do this. And she said, there is no this. That's just an idea. And I said, I know. I threw my name in the hat to run it, and I was the first employee, and my job was to figure out how to move the needle in a country. And we do that community by community, holistically, through indigenous leaders. Now we do it in Haiti as well. And it's just been, I tell people I have the greatest job on the planet. It's been the coolest ride.
That's awesome. And I think, so that you guys know, that has continually, that same vision has captured our hearts, both in purchasing the land in Haiti and then with Matura, you know, in both of those places, it was, man, if we could see just redemption and resurrection happen in so many beautiful ways, and we really dig in this one spot, then hopefully it'll inspire others. It'll inspire other people. It'll inspire other communities around them. They'll want to come, hey, how do we do this in our communities? It'll inspire other churches, inspire other organizations to then find what are the one or two or three spots that they can get involved and see radical change happen. Because rather than, again, trying to do a little bit in a lot of different places, that if we could drill down and do, man, what if we could just try to make a radical difference in a couple spots, that we really feel like that is what will inspire the needle to really move forward in a lot of different ways. Been in a series on humility. And one of the reasons I wanted also to interview Kurt was this principle that we've been learning a lot about when it comes to humility, and especially as it in regards to how we help other people. And one of the books that we've read in partnership with 410 was a book called When Helping Hurts. And kind of some of the principles and the ideas behind that really affect a whole lot of different ways in terms of how we go and help people in our day-to-day lives, but especially the third world. So I'd love for you to talk about some of, about that principle, how you've seen that play out in both the good and the difficult ways.
Yeah, we believe God's blessed us with a model of development, that just with an idea that of this ministry that he wants us to go execute, and it's really been a crazy, you know, 5 years, and watching not only the growth in what we're doing, but the impact that God's been able to have in the work that he's doing in Kenya and in Haiti, just through the people and how we do it. And when I went to Uganda, I was wondering, you know, am I really making a difference? And so we really wanted to measure our results, and we wanted to figure out a healthy way to do development. And we found very quickly that the biggest challenge that we have, believe it or not, is not the people that we serve. It's really our own culture. It's the West. And our view that a lot of times we have the money and the idea, and therefore we think it should be kind of done our way. And we can't disconnect ourselves. That's not a critical statement, but we can't disconnect ourselves from our very culture of abundance. And we take for granted so many things in our country about how do we get through life, that when we go to the developing world, we think we can just solve their problems. And oftentimes, we do more to hurt than we do to help. And so, there's another book called Toxic Charity that talks about the similar thing, what we've referred to as unhealthy giving. And some of the ways, an example that I give of how that's manifested itself is, years ago, we had a young lady who traveled to Kenya, visited the community, and she was just impacted like most people are. It was a transformational experience, and she really just wanted to help. And it's all well-intentioned. And she realized that a lot of the children and a lot of the adults even didn't have shoes. And so she came back to the States, unknown to us, and she created this campaign, very elaborate. Her whole local community was involved, not only her church, but other churches. And she got shoes donated. And she would go through the shoes, and she would make sure that they weren't just, you know, really bad shoes. She would only keep the good shoes. And she collected 5,000 pairs of shoes. And we didn't know this was happening until one day we got a phone call, and it said, and there was somebody on the phone with me, and it said, hey, look, great news. We've got these 5,000 pairs of shoes. Now we need to get them to Kenya. Can you help us do that? And we're like, wow, we had no idea how to get them there. That's a big problem. They can buy shoes over there. And I said, okay, so they went to the airlines and found a way to get them transported over to Kenya at no cost, and 5,000 pairs of shoes arrived in this community. And most people would think, well, that's great. Kids are going to wear shoes, adults are going to wear shoes because they have a lot of diseases in their feet, and it's really a wonderful thing. Except that every shoe salesman, that anybody that was selling shoes for miles around that community was now out of business. And nobody really realizes that. We don't think about it in those terms. We think that we're helping, when actually what we're doing is undermining the economy. So, and there is an economy there. And so we learned a hard lesson early on that we used to have a thing called second bags. And you take one bag, you put all your stuff in that bag for your short-term trip, and the second bag, we're going to take clothes or school supplies or shoes or whatever, and we very quickly realized that that just can't happen. And that's hard for our culture because we want to help. We have the resources and we feel called to help. But there is a way to help in a healthy way, and that's an example of how it's unhealthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that we keep in mind, again, because that illustration that you gave is a great example, because it's very well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. And many times we have very good intentions to try to help, so it's not coming after anyone's intentions. But in terms of actually taking the time, to get to know and to figure out a culture, to figure out a context, to figure out what is actually helpful, it takes time to seek to understand. But again, we have an idea, and it's not in just this blatant arrogance, but it's kind of a cultural arrogance that we can walk around with and say, oh, we know how to solve that problem. And maybe if we have the resources or the money or the idea, and then we can do that. But why this is key in the context of this series and that principle so key is because that's true in all different aspects of our lives. I mean, that's true with all the different types of people that we interact with all the time. It's so easy for us to kind of have our idea, and so, you know, easy for us to have our quick solution in our back pocket and think, I know how to fix that. And if I was just had the opportunity, then I could fix that problem. We do that in politics all the time. Doesn't matter who the leader is. Doesn't matter, you know, what party's kind of in charge. It's always, I've got the idea, and I know exactly what I could do to fix it. And we kind of walk around with this sense of intellectual arrogance that we think, oh, I know, even though there is so much that you and I don't know. So many things happening behind the scenes, so much access to information and different kind of information you and I have no idea about. But yet we can walk around with kind of intellectual arrogance. We do that with other parents and their kids. You see them going in the store and you see their kids acting up. You know what that's like? And you're like, I'll tell you how to fix that kid, you know? I know exactly. But we have no idea of the situation that they're in. You know, it happens to me on a plane. I have to constantly remind myself all the time when you get the screaming baby on the plane, you know, and you're like, oh, I can't believe I got a screaming baby on a plane. But to have the, oh, what's going on there? What's that story? What's that context? I wonder what they're going through. I want to try to seek to understand before I walk around with this sense of I know how to fix everything, that in our relationships in life, to really lead with the spirit of humility, with really leading with this seeking to understand, it makes so much difference in us actually trying to help people. And that's what I love about 410. It's what I love about your model. It's coming inside and saying, we're okay with this happening in a more long-term effort, and we're okay with it taking more time because we really want to see long-term lasting change happen. So one of the things I mentioned before, just a quick story of the land and the purchase of the land and how really wanting it to happen quickly, but really willing to slow down. So,
yeah, you know, I'm guilty of it too. Again, we can't disconnect ourselves from the very culture that we grew up in, and I can't either. And I was in a community called Quava, Kenya years ago, and they wanted a health clinic, and there was an 8-acre piece of land that they had identified as community property, and they wanted to purchase it. It was for sale, and I said it wrong in the first service. I think it was about $24,000 for this 8 acres. Now, that may seem like a lot or little to you, I don't know, but you know, this is rich farmland, and they wanted to put a health clinic on there and a bunch of other community-based projects. And the deal was that they have to participate in their solution. There's lots of things that we can do to help them, usually with resources, but they have to participate in some way. And so we said, I'll tell you what, we'll give you a 10-to-1 matching grant. So for every shilling that you raise, we're gonna bring it up to 10 shillings. And if we divide up the cost of the property and you come up with a tenth of it, we'll come up with 9/10 of it, that's what we'll do. And they said, great. They thought that was wonderful. And so they went off trying to raise whatever the amount was, you know, from the local community. And they said, come back in 3 months because we're going to have a harvest. This is in a very pretty fertile, elevated area in Kenya. And we'll have the money then. And then we'll get started. And I said, okay. So I came back and with our staff, our country director, and we were sitting in a church with a dirt floor and sitting on benches. And they were very dejected. And they said, you know, we had a frost and a lot of our agriculture was ruined and we couldn't take it to market. So we didn't raise all of the money that we said we were going to raise. And I said, well, how much are you short? And I think as I think through it, I think it was like $2,500 they needed to raise and they were $1,000 short. Well, I'm over in Kenya for a couple weeks. I have $1,000 in my pocket. And I lean over to my country director and I said, you know, it's been 3 months. What he doesn't know is I've got a donor church back in the States going, you know, where are we? Let's get started. Let's move. Let's go. We want to see results. And I leaned over to him and I said, you know, we should just cover the $1,000 and we can get started. And we're whispering. And he said, you know, Kurt, if we do that, every single project thereafter, they're going to not live up to their obligation, and they're going to look to you to solve their problem, and we can't do that. If it takes another 3 months, it takes another 3 months. And he was absolutely right. And so we said, we'll wait. Now, the other story to that is a different community, but the same situation. There was land to be purchased. The community needed to raise the money. But this time, the church that was helping to fund that piece of property had a service team over there, and the community came by and took them to view the land and then told them, you know, 410 Bridge, all we need is another $1,000 or $2,000, and we could buy this land. But the community has no more money. We've done everything we can do, and we can't raise the other $2,000, and 410 Bridge won't do it for us. Well, you can imagine if you're a service team and you've been over there, and they go back at night and they have their team debrief, and they are hammering our organization saying, $2,000, that's nothing. They haven't even asked us for the $2,000. If they did, we would have done it. Let's get started. But what they don't realize is the community does have the funds. They do have the motivation. They do have the organization behind it, and it just takes more time than we want. Our culture here is one of instant gratification. You know, we want things right away. We have this love affair with efficiency and time. And time has no authority in the developing world. That's one of the things that when Helping Hurts will tell you. And their time frame and relevance to time is very, very different than ours. And so we just have to step back, be pulled, let them pull us. There's plenty of things that we can do to help them, but they have to lead.
Yeah. And that's something that, I mean, hopefully you guys know that we're trying to learn that very same principle, and we're learning it all the time. Because we can definitely, and we have learned a lot of lessons. I remember very clearly, it was probably 4 years ago, I stood on this stage, probably right about there, and I remember coming back from Haiti and seeing these women spending hours and hours and hours a day washing clothes by hand. And we were like, man, what? How could we help that problem? Is there some way we could help that problem? And so we had asked them, hey, would you want a washing machine? And they were like, yeah. And so I stood right here and I was like, hey, church, we got them a washing machine because that's how we roll. And everyone was like, yeah, yeah, you know. And we celebrated. And then we come down there months later and that washing machine is still sitting in plastic right there, not moved. Because what would happen was, yeah, that all these people would have lost their jobs. These women, that's how they feed their families. Many of them single moms, and they make, you know, what we think, well, that's just kind of maybe peanuts, but for them, that's what their family lived on. And not only that we're trying to, with these kids in this home, to raise up kids that then go and infiltrate the community and just live lives and live out kingdom lives there. And they're not going to have a washing machine when they leave out here. And how do they learn what they're going to have to go and pass on? And unless we buy a washing machine for every family in Haiti, and then that doesn't make sense. And so this idea of being very well-intentioned, yeah, we discover, man, and we're just learning, and we're learning all together, and that's why we need to link arms together and try to figure out, man, we've always got to keep this in check, and what's the best, we got to think through, what's the long-term answer for this so that we can really contribute to long-term transformation. So, well, Kurt, I'd love for you to kind of share with our church, how can we best get involved? How can our church, because we're really excited about what's going on in Haiti, we know that in Haiti right now, we're still just now in the process of getting this leadership council together and starting to do that. And that's just kind of taken off the ground. And so we're excited about that. Matura, really excited. One of the things that captured our hearts about Matura was that we felt like, and I said this months ago, that, man, that was a community that a lot of churches wouldn't go to. You know, it's way at the top of a hill, kind of at the very end of the road, and it's difficult and it's challenging. And right now, they're last in education in their district and all these kinds of things, and a lot of people wouldn't pick them. And we said, man, God is leading us to them, and so we're so excited. So could you help us understand how all of us in the community, how can we get involved with what you guys are doing and what is a church Crosspoint's doing?
Sure. The first thing that you may take for granted that you can do is really you can begin to pray for the people in Matura. You can pray for the people in Ramon. In Ramon and Oban and that area, we're really looking for leaders to step up, and we really want God to start preparing the hearts of leaders to not look at their problems through a selfish lens. What can they do to step up on a council and prepare their hearts to go lead their community? So prayer would be helpful. There are people in Matura today that, they already had church this morning, but this morning I'm sure they prayed for Crosspoint Church. There are five churches in Matura, and they know that you guys have partnered with them, and they're praying for you. And so if you could pray for them, that would be awesome. They need your prayers. The other way that you can get involved right away is, for us, it's really about strengthening and creating relationships within the body of Christ. That doesn't mean that there's not things that we can go do. For example, when a problem arises in a community and a need arises, we ask the community what they can do to solve that problem, and then we determine what it takes to really get the problem solved, and we fill that gap. So in Matura today, they're digging trenches, or this past couple weeks, they've been digging trenches for water. No one asked them to do that, but now they need a tank. So we'll use the funding coming from Crosspoint to buy them a big tank while they dig the trenches and lay the pipe to get water to those trenches. And so there's lots of things you can do, but relationships is what we really look for churches to do. So to go and serve on a service trip would be awesome. That's a way to build a relationship, but most of the people in this room will never go on a service trip to Kenya or to Haiti. We wish you would, but there's only so much capacity. So one of the ways you can plug in is you can sponsor a child. No greater way to connect with a community is to develop a relationship with someone in that community, and child sponsorship is one of the ways to do that. We have what we call a quality improvement program at the school, at Matura Primary, which, by the way, is the worst performing school in the district. I think it's out of 43. They're number 43. I think that's what it is. And over the next 3 to 5 years, they will become one of the top 5 schools in their community. I'm really, really excited about that. But the way that happens is through a child sponsorship program where the money goes to improve the quality of education for the entire school. So you have a relationship with a particular child, but the money goes to hire more teachers. They may have maybe 4 or 5 teachers. They need 12. They don't have enough books. They share one textbook among 5 to 6 kids. And so the money that you support a child with really goes to the whole school and lifts the quality of education for everybody in that school. And you can correspond with that child, letter writing, and so forth. And the other thing that is really, frankly, pretty cool, I think, is a program we started called Rafiki Mail. And Rafiki, everybody remembers Lion King and the monkey on Lion King, right? His name is Rafiki. Well, Rafiki means friend in Swahili. And so Rafiki Mail is kind of this instant messenger electronic communication that isn't so instant. What we do, remember, as Jonathan said, Matura is at the end of a road. It's a destination. There's only one way in and out of Matura. And so what we do is we've created a program online through an experience we had last summer where anybody in this room can start communicating with a resident in Matura. And the way you do that is you get a whiteboard or a piece of paper and you write a note to them and you take your picture. And there's a website, rafikimail.org, that you can upload that that picture to your friend, to your Rafiki. And our staff in Kenya will print that out in Nairobi, actually jump on a plane and go to Western Kenya where Matura is, drive about 1.5 hours to get to that community, find the person that is your Rafiki, hand deliver your little picture with your note on it, and ask them to write back to you and take their picture, drive back, fly back to Nairobi, upload it, and that's how we communicate, right? Big deal. But we have about 150 or 175 Rafikis currently online for you guys, all adults today, and we actually went to Matura this past week, and we got them to write you a note. And it was a note of, and believe me, it's sincere, of thanks for adopting their community. And so when you leave today, everyone's going to get a little Rafiki Mail photo to show you what that's like. And there's instructions on the back of how to get to RafikiMail.org and so forth. But I would really encourage you to do that because it is a huge, huge deal for a Kenyan to receive a note, personalized note from an American. They will keep it, they will hang it in their house, and they will correspond with you a couple times a month. And it's a great way to start a relationship before you go and before we even start working there.
Absolutely. So just to kind of keep in mind as you leave today, a couple things. One, the sponsorship thing. If you're interested in sponsoring a child, we still have a few of those left. Right on the other side of these double doors right here, there's a table set up with kids. And one of the things I love about the organization is they're committed to 100% of approving the education for 100% of the kids in that community. And that's huge. Not just a few select kids, many times that just get sponsored, but 100% of the kids, every single kid in that community. And so sponsorship's a great way to do that. And I know 410, one of the things, when he talked about the reason he has confidence that it moves up to the top is they've seen that over, and we've visited those communities when we visited different communities there in Africa where there was one that they were ranked like 147th in the district. 410, after being there 3 years, went to number one, their school, in terms of the education program and what they're doing. And so we're really confident in what's going to be able to happen there. So if you're interested in that, do that. These are the Rafiki Mail cards. The ushers will have these as you get walk out today. If you want, grab one of these, participate in that. Just a great, great way to be able to communicate, start to build those kind of relationships. We're going to have tons and tons of trips. We've already got dozens and dozens of people already headed over to Africa this year. We're going to be kicking, starting up again, trips to Haiti, hopefully by the end of this year and the beginning of next year. So excited about that. And also, just so that you know, just thank you for your faithfulness in giving. When we talk about these projects and we talk about the development in Haiti and the water project, we've committed out of the faithfulness and the generosity of you guys giving every single week $75,000 toward the water project this year, just this year. and $75,000 toward the development of land in Haiti. And so we're in. I mean, we're all in. And so you guys, every time that you give, every time that black bag comes or you give online and do all those kind of things, that is part of what that giving goes to, so that you are participating in the life transformation God is up to. So really, really thankful, really, really excited about all that's to come. Really excited to share with you guys today so that you get a fuller picture of kind of what our church is doing around the world. And so could you guys help me show our appreciation to Kurt for coming here today, sharing with us?
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Kurt will be outside at the 410 booth if you'd like to talk to him or ask him any other questions. And so let me pray for us, and then we'll get out of here today. Father, thank you so much for the privilege that you give us to partner with what you're doing in and around the world. Father, would you keep us humble? Would you keep us close to your heart? And may we find ourselves constantly doing this with you and not simply for you. We love you and thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, friends. See you next week.